Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is a Manhattan-bound B Express train. The next stop is Grand Street.
Mind the gap.
Evening all. I'm John Ellich, and this is Skylines, the City Metric podcast. Listeners, I have let you down. I promised at the start of this year, in the very first edition of this podcast this year, that we were going to be a bit less parochial and try and get out of the UK more. For a while, we did that. We had a couple of episodes about Africa. We had one about Philadelphia. In recent weeks, though, kind of, you know, with local elections and everything else going on back in the UK, and just also the sort of the people I've been able to line up for interviews recently, we've been a bit navel-gazing again. We've talked mainly about Britain and British cities. So finally, I'm going to try and break out of that again. Here, this episode is not about Britain at all. We are going to go to Moscow and talk to a guy called Milo Edwards, who is, I think probably it's fair to say, the most successful English stand-up comic who works primarily on Russian television at the moment. But he's been living out in Moscow for 4 years, and he's going to tell us about his experience there as an Englishman in the city, and you know, what the housing market's like, what the transport system is like, and, you know, all that kind of fun stuff. Before we get to Milo, though, a couple of very quick housekeeping points. Firstly, there won't be a podcast next week because I am going on holiday. I haven't taken a holiday so far this year, so I'm quite looking forward to that. I'm going to Valencia on the Mediterranean coast of Spain, which is a city I've heard good things about. But most importantly, it will have nice weather. But please do feel free to write in with your recommendations for what I should do with myself while I'm out there. Secondly, the New Statesman, while I'm away, the New Statesman is moving offices. We've been in our current digs on Carter Lane, EC4, for about 3 years now, I think. And, you know, we've recorded Skylines in our sort of podcasting basement room, which doubles as our mail room. It's a very glamorous environment. Well, I'll tell you a very quick story about it, actually. For a long time, there was a strange smell in the basement of this building, which occasionally, if you listen to the main New Statesman podcast, you will have heard Stephen and Helen cracking jokes about. There was a strange, slightly sweet smell. We weren't ever sure what it was. And then one day, the ceiling fell in, and it turned out there had been a leak the whole time. So that was reassuring. Nobody was hurt, and they patched it up quickly enough. But we did eventually locate the source of the smell. Was the effect a leak in the ceiling was having. But you know, it's been where I've recorded Skylines since the beginning. So I will, in an odd kind of way, I will sort of miss that room. But I'm told, in our glamorous new offices, which I've not seen yet, I'm told they're lovely, and even better, we're going to have a proper podcasting room to record these things. So that'll be nice. It'll be strange kind of being away during the moving week and just sort of coming back and having to sort of unpack in this strange office. But you know, change is generally good. Anyway, I'm rambling quite enough for the moment. So we now take you to our main event. Okay, so yeah, if you could just sort of tell us who you are, that'd be great.
Okay, sweet, yeah. Well, insofar as I know who I am, my name is Milo Edwards. I am a Brit, a Londoner, if you will, and I've been living in Moscow for almost 3 years, working as a stand-up comedian for TNT Television, which has been absolutely bizarre. In the UK, you may also know me from the Trash Future podcast, on which I'm a regular host, and also general stand-up and me saying dumb stuff on the internet.
So you're famous in Russia, but not in Britain. Is that a reasonable way of describing your current fame level?
Yeah, I mean, any description of me as being famous in the UK would apply only to people who inhabit incredibly niche corners of the internet. I think it would be, yeah. So, I mean, I'm moderately famous in Russia. I would describe myself in Russia as like Geordie Shore level famous.
Are there any pictures of you in, like, you know, trunks that pop up in the tabloid newspapers over there? Or is it just kind of the level of fame, not the kind of type of fame?
Well, you see, this is a weird thing, right? Which is that in Russia, they don't really have celebrity culture in the same way that we do in the UK. Like, there's no, like, paparazzi or gossip magazines, really. They have, like, they have Russian versions of all the English magazines. So, like, they have, like, Russian Cosmo and Russian GQ and stuff. And I guess you can sometimes get in that. But generally speaking, it's just like, if you're moderately famous, you have your like Instagram following or what have you. And then that's kind of it. You never really, aside from the stuff that you specifically control, you never really find yourself in the media.
Is that good or bad? Because that kind of sounds like, on the one hand, it's quite good having a measure of control. But on the other hand, like, I mean, you got into this for the adoration, right? You want the attention, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, speaking as, you know, a narcissist, obviously it's deeply wounding to me that the Russian press is so disinterested in my life. I mean, I think if you're like properly mega famous, I think the press is very annoying. But when you're moderately, like a bit famous, I think the press is more useful because it makes continuing to be famous less hard work. Whereas sort of in Russia, everyone is like obsessively posting on Instagram and making YouTube videos and stuff the whole time in a way that like I really can't be bothered to do. But I still do better Instagram than most comedians do here, because most comedians are really bad at that kind of shit. Whereas I've just spent a lot of time on the internet. Yeah, I think people in Russia, like, the people really get bored of you fast if you're not, like, constantly creating some kind of content. There's not much of, like, a celebrity lifestyle that you can just kind of inhabit that sphere of famous people very easily.
So, in a second, I'm going to get you to tell us all about Moscow. But first, I kind of want to know, like, how did you end up famous in Russia? Like, how is this a thing that has happened to you? Because it kind of sounds like the plot of a slightly surrealist novel rather than something that would happen in real life.
Oh, mate, I wish I knew. I mean, I am actually sort of considering writing a book about it in my wankier moments, which probably no one will read apart from possibly my mum. Yeah, well, essentially what happened was, I have a very good friend from university who is Russian. We studied classics together. And I used to come here a bit on holiday, and I kind of like picked up the language a bit on the sly, and then had via him then had friends in Moscow. And so I decided to move here after I graduated for a sort of gap year before I started doing kind of stand up seriously, because I realized that once I'd started getting momentum doing stand up in London, I wouldn't be able to leave for any period of time. Otherwise it would just all go to shit again. So I was like, right, I'll go to Moscow for like 9 months and just do whatever. So I had a job as a tutor for a while. Well, I worked for various companies as a tutor with like more and lesser degrees of just like absolute horrendous things occurring. But then while I was doing that, I carried on doing a bit of stand up in English for these sort of like weird guys who did stand up in an expat bar, just so as not to lose it. And I sort of became like a like micro celeb on the kind of English stand-up scene, because there was like so few people who did it. And some TV producers from TNT came down to watch one of the shows because they wanted to know like what the fuck was going on with this English stand-up. Well, basically it later transpired that they actually spoke no English. So they came to this show and they watched me and they were like, do you want to be on TV? And I was like, sure. So then it transpired they hadn't actually understood a word that I had said, but they had just gotten the vibe that I was good.
Ah, the audience seemed to be enjoying it. So what more do you need, really, I guess?
Well, exactly. Although, as I've later discovered with Russian TV a lot, you can go down as well as you like, but if the editors decide they don't like it, it ain't going on the TV.
So do you now have, I mean, you said you didn't want to sort of like lose momentum in your career in London by sort of taking time out to travel or whatever. Do you now have the same problem in reverse, where you can't leave Russia because it would kill your career there?
I definitely have felt like that, but I'm now over it. I'm so done with Russia. I'm so bored of it. I'm so like, I've suffered enough and I'm coming back to the UK in the summer. But yeah, there's definitely a case of, if you want to be famous in Russia and stay famous in Russia, you've got to be on the treadmill. It's not like, Yeah, it's like I was saying earlier, basically, there's this thing where in the West, if you kind of get famous once, you kind of stay a bit famous forever, although you might get less famous. Whereas in Russia, you really fall into obscurity fast if you stop being on TV and stop, like, constantly touring and all that kind of stuff. So that has been a factor for me. Like, I think mostly because initially what happened was I got put into a TV show called Open Microphones, like the best way to translate it, which was basically a bit like Last Comic Standing or something in the US. And I came second in that. And then off the back of that, I got this freelance thing working for Stand Up, which is a bit like Live at the Apollo kind of format. And I've just like kept coming back to do that because that seemed like a good opportunity at the time. Now it feels increasingly like a waste of time. I feel like, oh, if I'd have spent all of this time in London, what might I have achieved? I might have achieved nothing, of course. That is entirely possible. But now I'm starting to feel like, yeah, Russia is a bit of a waste of my time. I've kind of reached a sort of plateau here where, like, the people in the TV don't like me enough to advance my career. And so I'm just kind of a sort of bit player in the TV market, if you like.
So as we record this, it's kind of mid-April. It's a time of international tensions, let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. What's it like being a Westerner in Moscow at the moment? Like, how do people respond to you as a Brit?
In many ways, nothing has changed. Like, I think the big change really happened in sort of 2014, 2015, when basically all the Westerners left, when kind of the ruble crashed through the floor, and kind of all the Western companies started like shutting up shop. And that was like the big divide, really. You kind of then, most of like the normal Westerners left. That was about when I arrived. So it was like a weird time to arrive. And so, I mean, generally speaking, most of the way in which Russia figures in the sort of Western political landscape doesn't really come up in Russia almost at all, in the sense that, like, okay, so you've got this whole like Skripal thing that was going on in the UK and like it was a big deal internationally, but in Russia it's not a big deal. Like, it's not really in the news very much. People aren't really very aware of it unless they're hyper into politics, and so it doesn't really affect, like, the general narrative has been that, like, the West is evil for like 10 years. And so that kind of, if people weren't already on board with that, the kind of these like minor fluctuations in relations don't really seem to affect people. Mostly on a day-to-day level, especially for specifically for English people and broadly Europeans, they just kind of like foreigners. Usually they're kind of intrigued by foreigners and the West. I think Americans get a bit more negative, but even then I don't really think it's a thing. The main thing is, like, the police can fuck with you. If you get on the wrong side of the police, you can have a very bad day. But the man in the street, I would say, is like not particularly difficult. Or they're not any ruder to you than they would be to the average Russian. Unfortunately, that level is extremely rude, but still.
So is there any sort of like cachet? Are you sort of seen as exotic at all?
Definitely, depending on who you hang out with. So there's this weird phenomenon. Well, kind of what I said about all the normal foreigners leaving is definitely a thing, in that most of the foreigners who are left are either people who are like mental, in the sense of like, we definitely should have left, but we didn't because we were like after some kind of crazy adventure, which is people like me, but we're very few and far between. But then the vast majority of foreigners who are here are people who are like losers. It's kind of hard to, I can't think of like a better way to describe this. People who, like, clearly it was not going well for them in the West. Like, something has gone very horribly wrong in their life, and they were like, I can run away from these problems by going to Russia, where people will think I'm cool because I'm a foreigner, and women will sleep with me because I'm English. And like, that is definitely a huge thing. And those, you see these people, like, I know so many people here who are just like from England or whatever, and they're complete assholes, and it's obvious to me that they're assholes from like the first second I've met them. But there are certain kinds of Russians who like fawn over them because they want like a foreign friend or whatever. But those Russians are themselves usually weird people, and not like, not the kind of people that my Russian friends would hang out with. So there is definitely, there's like a market for that. If you want to be like the foreigner that everyone loves amongst some like weird Russian people and like girls who want to sleep with you so that you take them to the West or whatever, that's definitely a thing that still happens. But it's not a sphere that I inhabit. Like, a lot of my Russian friends don't speak English, for example.
When we met a few weeks ago when I appeared on your podcast, because podcasting is that kind of incestuous world, but at the time
sort of online circle jerk.
We're all well known among the same 60 people, but yeah, so at that point you were about to move back to Moscow. I think you were talking about looking for somewhere to live. What's the housing market like out there? Like where did you end up? How's it compared to London?
Yeah. When we last spoke, I was about to go back. I'd taken like 3 months off and traveled around the US, and then I had to go back to prepare for filming, which is happening in June. But yeah, so I'd given up the flat I had, which was in dead center in the north at this place called Novoslobodskaya, which is considered like a pretty nice area, like pretty central. I don't know. It's a bit like living in like, I don't know, like Islington or somewhere in London. Yeah. So that I'd given up that flat, which was like a shitty flat in a nice area, like very like Soviet style level of repair. Like loads of stuff didn't work. There's like mysterious holes. Everything's a bit grim, like an oven from about 1946, but it was in the very center. So it was quite good in that way. But yeah, then so I was looking for a new place and I had an absolute nightmare, because there's this weird thing in Moscow where it's not expensive to rent somewhere, but it can be like impossible to find anywhere, which is like, it's kind of like the opposite of London. It's like you can always find somewhere if you're willing to pay through the nose for it. But in Moscow, it's just often like there is just nowhere. So it took me ages. And I eventually looked at I looked through so many listings of things which would have made Joel Golby's London Rental Opportunity of the Week column look positively vanilla. Like a sort of cupboard with a mattress in it. You know it's bad when even Russians are commenting on it going, this is ridiculous, because I've seen some of the places Russians are prepared to live and be like, this is fine. the standard is like way lower. Like I've definitely been in my mate's apartments that they're renting for money, and I'm like, in the UK you could not rent anyone this apartment. Like people would come in here and be like, oh yeah, I'll move in when you've finished building the apartment. Like there's no, like some of the shit I've seen. One of my mates looked around an apartment where it had no kitchen because they'd made it into another bedroom. And then they went into the bathroom and there was like a massive oil painting hanging on the wall. And they spoke to the estate agent and they were like, well, the fuck's up with that oil painting? And the guy's like, oh, I don't know, maybe they just like art or something. The estate agent went into another room and my mate like moved the oil painting and there was just a huge like 3 foot across hole in the wall. Like, some fucking passage into Russian Narnia.
What have they done with the kitchen? Where was the kitchen?
They just removed it. So my mate asked them and they were like, oh, well, you know, you can like order delivery club or whatever, which is like Russian delivery. And it's like, right, okay, clearly I'm not gonna bother arguing with this man because he's so far down the route of being insane that there's no point. Right, so eventually I found an apartment through using a foreigner to my advantage. Previously I'd used being slightly famous to my advantage, but it turns out I'm less famous now. Last time I just put an ad on one of the Moscow flats groups with a picture of me from the TV and I was like, I'm looking for a room, and I had about like 50 girls send me a message within about 5 minutes, most of whom were like moderately mental, but then eventually some of whom were quite normal, and that I ended up living with one of them. But yeah, this time that didn't work, so I went on one of these expat kind of housing groups. And I found this French guy and an Irish guy who I live with now in like actually a massive apartment, not quite as central as where I used to live, but still pretty central. It's this area called Krasny Vorota, the Red Gates. And it's like a big kind of European looking apartment, sort of 3 bedrooms and a living room and a kitchen. It's pretty nice. Some slightly dodgy decor in parts, like some kind of that kind of decor that like when you, there was an episode of Changing Rooms and the people would come in and go like, oh yeah, no, it's yeah, it's good.
So is it like you're not in like Soviet era blocks or something? You're in like something older than that?
Yeah, I would say this probably is a Soviet era. It looks like a maybe 60s, I would guess, because if it was Stalin era, it would probably be nicer. So Stalin had really good taste in architecture. You know, say what you like about Stalin, but the architecture was on point. And so his buildings tended to be like grand and very high ceilinged and stuff, and have walls that were thick enough that basically they could take a sort of German tank round and it wouldn't wake you up. But yeah, this is, I think it's slightly later because it's brick built, whereas the Stalin ones tend to be rendered. So I would guess it's like Khrushchev or Brezhnev kind of era. But it's quite like a nice building-ish. Like if you looked at it from the outside, you'd think, oh my God, this is a crack den. But once you come inside the apartment, it's quite nice, like kind of, you know, parquet floors and sort of all the stuff in it is quite new, but stylistically it looks a bit 90s.
That's probably the right way round. It's probably better to think it's like a crackdown on the outside than to like be thinking, oh, this is really nice, and then get in there and it is a literal crackdown. So
yeah, and I've seen that. And it's also amazing how like your standards vary depending on where you are. Like this apartment, like it's not great, but it's fine. But then we had like a housewarming party, and a lot of my Russian mates came over, and they were like, how do you afford such a nice apartment? And I'm like, is this that nice? Where do you live? So that was a bit of an eye opener.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So what's the kind of the worst sort of housing situation you've encountered while you've been there?
Well, a lot of my mates are quite lucky in that their families have had apartments for years, because basically until like the early 2000s, property in Moscow used to be basically worthless. Well, indeed, under the Soviet Union, it explicitly had no value. Like you couldn't buy or sell property really in any meaningful sense. People just used to be like given stuff by the state or have it taken away by the state. You didn't really get that kind of like massive increase in values of Moscow property until the 2000s. So a lot of my mates, even though they're not from particularly wealthy families, their parents own these like massive apartments in the center of Moscow, which they basically got either for free or for almost nothing in like the 80s or 90s, but which are now worth like probably close to $1 million. The other weird thing about Moscow is that like the rent is actually very cheap compared to the value of the housing stock. I don't really know why that is. But so yeah, you can own like a $1 million apartment, but it only rents for like $2,000 a month or whatever. That seems to be a thing. So like, I don't really pay very much for this apartment. I pay like 29,000 rubles, which is like $500, something like that, for my like room.
So how does Moscow you've lived in London, right? How does Moscow as a city compare? Can you sort of map different areas onto like London and New York or wherever, where you're thinking, okay, this is the hipster district, this is the business district or whatever? Like how does it kind of function like a Western city?
Not really. There's like superficial similarities, I would say, which is that it has the same geography of expensiveness. Like, so North Moscow is more expensive than South Moscow, and West Moscow is more expensive than East Moscow, which I gather is like a really old European thing due to the prevailing wind. So like the western parts of cities used to smell better because the wind came in from the west and then blew all of the like shit smell onto like the east part, which was where all the poor people lived. I don't know how true that is, but apparently that was a thing.
Yeah, no, that is, I don't know if it's universal, but it is common. Like, there is a tendency in London to sort of think, well, the East is poorer because that's where the docks are. But actually, in Paris, like, even though the East was further inland, that was still the poor bit. So yeah, it does seem to be a wind thing.
But yeah, and then, but apart from that, kind of, the culture in Moscow is, like, very different. So it's a little bit, I guess it's a little bit like Paris in a way, in that, like, all of the center is nice and then all of the suburbs are shit. There's like not really like that kind of certain areas of the center are like more expensive than other. Well, there is a bit of that, but like it's mostly just like anywhere within what they call the Garden Ring, which is like the ring. I live just outside it. Anywhere within that is like hyper expensive. And then anywhere like kind of between that and what they call the Third Ring is like still pretty expensive and considered to be nice in the center. And then once you get outside that Third Ring, then you start to find like dodgy areas, but it doesn't really, it's not like they're dodgier in the south than in the north. It's all kind of like equally dodgy by like distance from the center. But I guess that's partly because they deliberately built all of these massive tower block complexes around the edge of the city, a bit like the French did with the banlieue in Paris or whatever, and kind of like contained people in these areas. What you mentioned about hipsters is kind of interesting, because there is like, there's this massive hipster culture in Moscow, but it's like very, it feels very, well, I mean, actually it feels very fake everywhere, but it feels especially, it's like been like all imported. Like you get these Russian companies that have like, oh, they've been to London or New York for a day. And then they've like tried to, they've built their own like hipster burger place or whatever, and they've kind of, and it's like a sort of badly done copy of like somewhere you might have gotten in Dalston or whatever, but there's like 20 of them all over Moscow all of a sudden.
Is it a good city to be, I mean, like the hipster culture aside, is it kind of a good city to be young in? Is there a nightlife? Are there like bars you can go to? How's all that sort of thing work?
I've got a whole theory of this, and now I'm trying to put it into good words. Basically, in Moscow, there is this weird sensation amongst like the young people that I know who are largely upper middle class, I guess you could say, amongst Russians. And they're mostly the children of what the Russians like to call the intelligentsia. So this is people who are like, their families were privileged in the Soviet Union rather than have become rich in the new Russia. So they're a lot less rich than the people in Russia who are considered to be the rich, who are mostly people who stole a lot of money in the 90s by various schemes. But they're still like pretty wealthy, even by like Western standards. And amongst them, there's this weird thing where it's like, there is no future. Like there is that none of them conceive of the idea that there is in Russia any point to advancing yourself or to like having a career or anything of the like, because, well, first of all, it can all be taken away from you at a moment's notice. And second of all, because they just feel like this country is collapsing around their ears, which I think is true. And the consequence of that is that the only thing people are really interested in is having a good time. And so it means that like almost everyone I know is just like partying every weekend with like abandon, like doing whatever drugs they can get their hands on and going out. There's a lot of like rave type places and stuff like that. That's kind of, if you inhabit those more hipstery circles, that's kind of what people do. And then on the other side, you have like kind of, I suppose what we might call the Russian version of like normie culture, which is more the children of like what we would call the nouveau riche, like very rich people who similarly don't really have any interest in advancing themselves, because when your dad is a billionaire, you literally don't need to. But it has a slightly different tone to it. So they go to these places, like there's this island in the river called Krasny Oktyabr, Red October, which has the really exclusive clubs on it. Like there's one called Strelka, there's another one called Gypsy. And if you go there, they're just full of like the worst Russians and also a few rich foreigners who go there to hang out with the worst Russians. And they have this thing called face control where like they don't let you in if they don't think you're like cool enough to come in or whatever. There's also a bar like this called Simachov, which is in the center of Moscow, which is like similarly, it's a tiny bar, but they have face control for some reason on the door. And so that's kind of, those are, I guess, the two main segments. You're either in the kind of like wild, abandoned, last days of Rome rave group, or you're in the kind of like hyper rich, going to these very expensive top 40 hit playing nightclubs group.
So, I mean, do you oscillate between those two? I mean, you're pretty elite, aren't you?
So I never really go to those like elite places. I have been to them in the past, but only like once or twice, because they are just horrendous. It's like the Russian equivalent of going to like Bougie or Mahiki or somewhere. You're in there and you're just like, why? Why am I in this place? But then I don't go out a huge amount anymore either at all, because I guess we've all gotten a bit older, like particularly my mates are a bit older than me. So we don't tend to, like, one of my friends runs his own club night, so we'll usually go to that if it's on. But apart from that, we don't usually. There used to be, like, I would say about a year and a half ago, there used to be a lot more raves and stuff than there are now, and they've kind of cracked down on it. No one was ever really sure how legal it was. We used to go regularly to this place called Armour, which was this huge warehouse, they used to have, like, these semi-legal raves. They were probably paying bribes to put them on. And it was right next to the dispatching center for the traffic police. So if you'd be like looking out of the window of this rave, and it'd be like 6 a.m. There'd be all these cops showing up to work and getting in their police cars and stuff. It was quite like, on one level amusing, on another level, it's sort of slightly alarming if you were tripping.
Can you still smoke indoors in Moscow?
Not technically, no. But, well, I'm not sure exactly what the law is, but Putin is actually really anti-smoking. So there's loads of like really aggro anti-smoking laws in Russia. There's a lot of places where you can't even smoke on the street. Like, for example, on Red Square, you can't smoke at all. Any places that are defined loosely as like public places, so like squares and parks and stuff, you can't smoke. And sometimes on the street, if you're outside certain buildings and I don't know, there's a lot of weird rules, given how much the Russians love to smoke. It's one of the few pleasures that are still afforded them in life. So basically in any bar or restaurant or whatever, you can't smoke indoors. In a lot of nightclubs, you can, not because I think you're allowed to, but because I think they realize that they don't really want to have a smoking area because it's really cold in the winter. And also if it's like a massive club, it would take you like 20 minutes to get from to the smoking area and back because of the way some of these places are laid out. I remember at Armour, they used to have like indoor smoking areas, like a specific room where you'd go through those like kind of like warehouse plastic flaps and then you could smoke in there and then you could come back out. But there's another club called Space where they just let you smoke on the dance floor. So I don't know. But yeah, officially you definitely can't, but in a lot of places you can in terms of nightclubs.
That seems to be like a sentence that sounds like it would sum up quite a lot of aspects of Moscow life, to be honest.
Oh god, yes.
So to wrap up, like, you know, this being the City Metric podcast, it would not be complete without my asking you about the transport system. Like, Moscow has a very famous subway system, right? Like, how's that? Does that seem to work?
It does, yeah. I mean, I would say probably as Moscow goes, the metro is probably one of the better things about it in a lot of ways. I mean, I use the metro pretty much every day. It's incredibly cheap. It costs about 50p each go. So I'd spend about as much on the metro in Moscow in a month as I do on the tube in London in like less than a week. It's very like dirty, smelly and unpleasant. And most of the trains are incredibly old. But it is fast. Like, you never really have to wait more than about a minute for a train. And if you can squeeze onto the thing, it's usually pretty busy, the Moscow Metro. But yeah, you can get around the city pretty fast on it. It's definitely like an efficient, if unpleasant, transport system. But then the buses are just completely useless. I've never understood people who get buses in Moscow because the traffic is so ungodly horrendous. It's like, has this like Dante-esque like ninth circle of hell vibe to these like unending traffic jams which can occur at any time of day. It could be like 9 p.m. and there's like gridlock traffic and no one knows why and it's a Sunday. So there's like, the metro is very good. Almost anything else I can't make head nor tail of. There are trams in some parts of the city, which I used to live near a tram line. And I couldn't really for the life of me work out where it went from and to. Because it's like, you know, it doesn't go all over the city because it's only in certain specific bits. But yeah, and the cabs are extremely cheap. So if you get like an Uber or whatever, it's going to cost you like about as much as the tube would have done in London, which is pretty good.
So how does the city cope with snow? Because it gets like, it must get like pretty heavy snowfall every winter, right? Does it seem cut out for that, or does everything just kind of stop for 6 months?
No, they do deal with the weather pretty well, because if they didn't, they would just have an unending night. Well, so there are two basic phases to this. So in Russia, basically, they really care about cars. There's this real like aspirational hierarchical thing to like owning a car. People consider like driving to work to be a higher class activity than like getting the tube to work. Even if getting the metro would be quicker and easier and generally less stress for everyone. Like, if you're above a certain level in your career in Russia, you do not get on the metro. That's kind of like, if ever I get recognized in the metro, people are like, what are you doing in the metro? And I'm like, well, because it's like the easiest, I don't own a car. Like, what? but they're like shocked to see someone from the TV on the metro. That to them is like confusing. So a lot of my mates, like, they drive to work every day, not because it's the most, you know, like, easy or correct way of getting there, but just because to that, like, they've got a car, so I drive to work because that's, like, my status in society. So in relation to that, there's a massive kind of respect of the system towards cars as opposed to pedestrians and stuff. So they expend a lot of effort, like, ploughing the roads, using a lot of incredibly cheap immigrant labour to just like shovel snow out of the way. Like, they have like teams of like very unhappy looking men from Tajikistan who they like bus into the city at 5 a.m. in the winter, who just like snow out of the way, often using like not even proper shovels but like homemade things out of like jerry cans with like a broom handle taped to it. Like, really, yeah, it's like they're paying you like £1 an hour and they've not even given you a shovel. You've had to like make your own. Which is welcome to the motherland. So yeah, if you're driving, it's fine. I mean, the roads can be a bit dodgy, but in terms of snow, you're all right. But then as a pedestrian, God only knows what could befall you. Like, so there's usually ice all over the pavements, which they make no effort to like grit or clear. So you just have to kind of like jump over it, be hyper aware. And there's like a certain kind of skill that you develop. And they have this huge problem with icicles. So you've got all these really high buildings and narrow pavements. And then what happens is if it gets a bit warmer for a couple of days, the icicles fall from the top of the buildings and just kill people who are walking past.
I'm quite hysterical about that. Have you literally seen icicles drop, or is this something that's just on the news? Or?
I have. So this is like a legit thing. Basically, if you speak to any Russian, they all have like a childhood acquaintance or friend who was killed by an icicle. Like, this is like, and they just treat it as like a matter of like, oh, like, you know, it's just, this is what happens, you know, every now and then people get killed by icicles. But this doesn't happen in like any other cold country. It's like a unique Russian thing where obviously in like Canada or wherever, they've just come up with a way of building the roof so that this doesn't happen. But in Russia, they're just like, nah, fuck it. And so what you often get is when you're walking along the pavement, there'll be like caution tape, like taped around like dining chairs or whatever, to make sure you walk like 3 foot from the edge of the building. Which often means you have to walk in the road and maybe get run over. And also does not mean you won't be hit by an icicle. Because if it's falling from like 7 stories up, it can easily fall more than 3 feet from the building. But, you know, that's kind of their like lip service to health and safety. But actually recently, this was back in like late March, I think. Yeah, I was walking. So our building has like most apartment buildings in Moscow. They're kind of three-sided and they have like a courtyard in the middle. So I was walking through our courtyard, and there were a load of guys from the state gas service, and they were digging up like the gas pipes in our courtyard. I don't really know what they were doing. And they were all standing around this dug up gas pipe having a cigarette, as you do. normal and fine. And at this point, this huge block of ice, I would say about 0.5 meter across, just fell off of one of the roofs. How many stories was this building? I'm looking at it now. It's about 8 stories. So it fell off the roof and it landed in the middle of me and these guys, probably about like 2 meters from each of us. And there was this like moment of silence. And then one of the guys just went, fuck me in the mouth. and then we all realized that if that had fallen on us, we would definitely have been killed. And that's just, you know, you live in Moscow, you roll the dice. That's basically the system.
I mean, under the circumstances, I don't think you can blame anyone for smoking indoors, really. But there we go.
No. It's safer.